good citizens of Crypt Nation. Welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. It is your host, the Notorious Pizza Mind, and I am joined by Bryce Paul over here. I'm doing the introduction today just because we rolled the dice differently and I scored higher than he did. Yeah, Bryce, how are you doing over there?
You know, I just came back from Vegas, lost all my money. No, I only lost 30 bucks, actually, so I felt pretty good. So I decided, hey, let's take a little coin toss, and Pizza Mind won this one. My luck hasn't run out because Bitcoin and Ethereum and everything is just, you know, the market's cranking. The altcoins are still cranking. So I think we're in for a really nice Q2, quarter two, right? You know, just started here in April, fingers crossed. I see our guest on video behind the scenes already crossing his fingers. If you guys aren't following us on YouTube and you're already listening to this just on Spotify or whatever, come check us out on YouTube. There's a whole new element. Come see what me and Pizza Mind's ugly mugs look like and all of our beautiful guests.
We got Josh costumes every day for you guys, so yeah, well, don't waste my efforts.
Yeah, we should have a DAO that just votes on what kind of costumes we wear.
Oh, God, no. That's a horrible idea. But, you know, back to business. We're all about trying to onboard the next 100 million users into crypto. That's what we do here at Crypto 101, maybe 101 million. And someone who shares our sentiment and goal and slogan is the founder of Origin Protocol, Josh Frazier. We've been a big fan of yours for a long time. Glad to have you back on the podcast. Welcome, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on. Huge fan of what you guys are doing. I think you do incredibly important work of bringing new people into a space and getting up to speed on what crypto is and why it's important and educating them. So very, very grateful for the outstanding job that you guys do.
Well, we have the easy job over here. We just get to talk to amazing founders like yourself. And just stare in awe going, wow, I wish we could do all that. But while we're busting our humps over here, you have to. Origin launched in 2018 and was one of the coins that, you know, we really were watching out over here for all the promise that it had and all the things that it made capable. For those who haven't heard of this yet, give us a high-level overview of what Origin Protocol is and what you guys have been up to in the past couple of years since we last had you on.
Yeah, there's been a lot going on. When we, you know, we launched our coin in 2018, we actually started in 2017 building in this space. But we started out with a very different product than what we have today. We started out trying to do like a decentralized marketplace for anything, and that was the original vision that we set out with. Today, we've narrowed in a little bit on two different areas, one in DeFi and one in NFTs. So we have two different products there. On the NFT side, we have Origin Story, which has been the marketplace for some of the largest NFT sales in, that have happened. We started with Blouse that did $11.7 million and at the time was the highest or largest NFT sale to that point, and is still the largest music NFT sale to date.
And what was really, the artist for that one?
This is Justin Blau. The DJ. So this is before Beeple. So this, at the time, that was the largest one. And really, if you look back, that was really the moment when NFTs entered the mainstream consciousness. Before then, it was really just nerds like us that kind of knew what NFTs were. And this happened, you know, height of COVID. All the artists were stuck at home. No one was touring. No one was making any money. And then Blau kind of came out of nowhere with this huge NFT drop. And that's where, like, the entire industry kind of started paying attention to NFTs. You saw a huge influx of mainstream awareness of people coming into NFTs, other artists getting involved in doing their own NFT drops, and a lot of, you know, promotion, a lot of new people coming into crypto as a result of that.
Yeah, no, it seems like Origin Protocol, you know, you guys really run the gamut across the crypto sphere and you guys do a lot of things. And I love the tagline. Pizza Mind already mentioned it, but onboarding the next 100 million users to crypto. Like, I think I want to focus a lot on that because not enough builders are focused on usability and user adoption. They're focused on, you know, here's this really new, interesting, cool technology. How could we make the most cutting edge thing and, you know, get the fanciest equations and formulas for the best efficiencies and yada, yada, yada. But they're not thinking about, like, the, you know, getting mass adoption for, you know, hundreds of millions of people to use this stuff. And you know, it's a difficult problem to solve. So that's, and it's a bold statement. You guys have it on the very front of your webpage. What does it mean to you? How are you guys doing this? You know, what is it specifically that you guys are doing that's going to make, you know, 100 million people come to crypto through Origin Protocol?
Yeah. Personally, I would have thought that it would be DeFi that would be the killer app that would, you know, really bring in the most people to the space. And we'll talk about the work we're doing on the DeFi front today. But, you know, to my surprise, I think NFTs have maybe done more to bring sort of mainstream awareness and bring new people into the space. They're something that, you know, a lot of people can get very easily. And, you know, they certainly have generated a lot of excitement, particularly with, you know, you have like all of these celebrities and people coming in holding Bored Apes, you know, but the reach of some of these people, like we did a drop with Paris Hilton, right? And seeing her go on, you know, TV and talk about what she's doing in NFTs, the people she can reach are just, it's a much, much bigger audience than what we have, right? And so I think that's one of the unique aspects of NFTs. It's really expanded the audience of people who are paying attention to this stuff. As far as how we think about it from a product standpoint, is really about how do we make it really simple and easy. So getting to the DeFi side, we have a product today called Origin Dollar or OUSD. And you can think of it as the easiest way to earn in DeFi. As you guys know, there's always like amazing opportunities in DeFi to earn just great yields from, you know, lending platforms like Aave and Compound, trading platforms like Uniswap and Curve and Balancer. And then, you know, a lot of these DeFi protocols are offering incentives as well, where they're offering rewards for using this platform. But there's a lot of pain that goes along with using that as well. Now, there's gas costs on the Ethereum network that are quite expensive and prohibitive for the average user to get started. And really, the inspiration for this product came from being a yield farmer myself. And I went through this sort of very familiar flow, which is you're in a stablecoin pool, you're getting these rewards, and then you have to come back every couple of days and harvest your rewards, and you get these random tokens, and then you go and you swap them on Uniswap, and then you re-deposit them again. And you have to keep repeating a cycle as frequently as you can because you want the, you know, faster compounding. But then when you actually do the math on it, you look at how much you've spent on gas costs, it's cost you a fortune, and it's taken a bunch of time to maintain all of this.
Bingo.
and a lot of times, like, the yields are moving around, right? So you're like, in one pool today, and then, you know, you want to move to another pool because it's got higher yield, but it's too expensive and it costs too much to kind of chase that yield around.
Yeah, if you think about it, kind of like how some people are just like, because of all that complexity, all that time, and really you're just eking out maybe a percentage point, why don't you just, you know, kind of buy a product, like, you know, instead of doing active management, you just buy the S&P 500, right? And it's like, that's the same idea. You're not buying all the active management, you're just buying the market. And so it sounds like Origin kind of has a package like that.
Yeah. And one of the things that is important to understand, like on Ethereum, your gas costs are constant, right? You pay the same amount of money to move $1 as you spend to move $1 million, right? It's not a percentage fee that you're being charged.
Right.
So there's there's a huge advantage to sharing those costs and amortizing the costs of maintaining these positions with a large group of people. Because then if you're, you know, say it costs $50 to, you know, maintain a position, $50 for you, if you've only got, you know, $1,000 in it, that's a big percentage to swallow. But if it's split across $50 million, it's no big deal, right? So there's huge advantages to amortizing those costs. And so that's what Origin Dollar does. Right? It allows you to participate in all of these great yield farming opportunities without any of those hassles. And so it's backed by USDT, USDC, and DAI. Those funds, when you mint OUSD or you buy it, they're getting deployed into protocols, but, you know, and we focus solely on like the safest, most battle tested protocols out there that have had hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars in them, have been audited by the top firms. They've stood the test of time, right? We're not trying to take any crazy risks here with anyone's money. It doesn't make sense to gamble your principal for a few percentage points, right? So very, very focused on security and also that ease, right? So you take it, you put your money in your wallet. And what's unique about Origin Dollar is it just grows right there in your wallet. You don't have to do any staking. You don't have to do any lockups. You don't have to do any harvests. You don't have to do it. There is no step two. It's get some USD and that's it, right? Just sit back and let
and it rebases automatically.
And it rebases. Right? So, and just to be clear, like some people have an allergic reaction when you say rebasing because they've been burned with Ample 4 for Ohm or one of these ones that has like negative rebasing, where you'll check your wallet and it will like a bunch of money will have disappeared. So you don't have that problem. It only rebases in the positive direction. But that what's really cool about that is that your balance is just growing right there in your wallet. And so your OUSD is, always earning for you. And it's always ready to spend as well. So if you want to send some OUSD to a friend, you can send it to them. The minute it hits their wallet, it's immediately earning for them as well, right? So everyone wins, and you never have to go through that painful process of unwinding a position just to be able to spend it or use it in some other way.
I got to ask, just because it was so recent, the banking crisis that unfolded, and we saw Circle, who had $3.5 billion of USD that was stored with Silicon Valley Bank when they went under. That weekend, the market priced USDC as low as like 83 cents or something like that. And it was this big scare, depegged USDT tether that depegged to the upside. That went as high as like $1.05. And so spreads were all wacky. But as I'm asking, what was Origin's mindset going through that thing? I mean, that must have been chaos, because how would you guys, as kind of something that's pegged to a lot of that stuff, like how is it all working out?
Yeah, so it was obviously a bit of a nail biting experience for everyone. When we were designing Origin Dollar, we're operating under the assumption that these stable coins might have a serious depegging, and we wanted to plan for that. And the reason we thought that could happen is just historically it's happened before, right? And so looking back, we looked at the charts, was that each of these coins has had pretty major depegging events in the past. And so even though it doesn't feel too likely, we better plan for it. And so we built in multiple precautions into Origin Dollar to make sure that we'd be prepared if anything was depegging. So we did things like we used Chainlink oracles to tell us what the current price is. And then we're not going to give out a dollar worth of value for a coin that's trading at 93 cents, for example, right? We'll give you out 93 cents of value instead of a dollar. And so we had all these protections built in to the protocol. This was the first time it actually been tested in like a real world environment of a major stablecoin depegging to this degree. And so we were very proud to see, all of the protections we put in place really held up and did their job. OUSD, because it's about a third of the backing was in USDC, the price of OUSD came down as you would expect. But what was interesting is because we had, a third of our collateral was in Tether, people were swapping into OUSD instead of USDC or DAI, as it was a preferred asset. And so our price didn't depeg as much. And then as people were arbing as well, we were able to actually make quite a lot of money. And so the people holding OUSD ended up, I think that week we did like 44% APY on OUSD. It was, we did maybe 10 times more money than we usually do per day during that episode. So not only did the protocol not lose money, it was actually an incredibly profitable event for OUSD.
So for instance, those profits, all that volatility caused a lot of opportunity And are those fees like shared back with the token holders of OGN? Is there some company that's operating this? What's kind of like the structure look like? And for token holders who are thinking about maybe I'll buy OGN or take a look at OUSD, what's kind of the structure there?
Yeah, so all of that yield comes back to the protocol. So we're not pulling the money out. 10% of it is going to OGV holders. So just a little bit of historical context here. When we initially launched in 2018, we had OGN, which was our first token. Right. And then we had these two products. We have Origin Story on the NFT side, and then we have Origin Dollar. And it was quite confusing to try and design good tokenomics for both tokens and with two completely separate products. And so we launched OGV as a governance token for Origin Dollar. And so that's the governance token for it today. And so 10% of the yield that's generated by OUSD is used to buy back OGV on the open market. And then that's distributed as a reward to the people who are vote locking their OGV. So if you have OGV, you want to participate in governance. You vote lock it. It's kind of like the Curve's VE token model, where the longer you lock up for, the greater your economic and voting power becomes. So it transfers the ownership of the contracts to those who are most invested in the long-term success of a protocol. And then again, that 10% yield is being distributed to those people as an incentive for locking up. And you actually earn great APY on your OGV right now through that incentive mechanism.
That's really cool. There's so many different pivots that Origin has made, and I want to touch on that in a minute. But let's go back to the original vision, that decentralized marketplace. At the time, maybe it was a little bit too early to find the product market fit, but with central bank digital currencies coming out all over the world really fast, and they've admitted there's going to be spending controls and things like that, I think decentralized marketplaces are actually going to have a huge part in Web3 and Web4 in the future. You know, where do you still see that use case coming in? Do you still believe in it? And how will Origin position itself to like capture all that?
Yeah, I still very much believe in that. I think we'll see it come to fruition at some point. Now, what we ran into is like there's a lot of problems, at least when we were starting 2017, 2018, it just hadn't been solved yet. So a lot of use cases we were thinking about is how do you replicate Uber on the blockchain? How do you do things like Airbnb on the blockchain? And so a lot of the challenges we ran into were things like identity, privacy. Do you actually want to be, you know, revealing your physical location on an immutable blockchain for all eternity? I mean, that's maybe not the smartest idea. Gas costs are a huge problem, right? You're going to pay $40 in gas for a $10 Uber, right? Like, how's this going to work? So there's a lot of pieces that just we hadn't figured out at that point. And what we saw was that like the best use case for a decentralized marketplace right now would be a Silk Road, right? That's the sort of your use case where people need it the most. But we have, you know, both myself and my co-founder, we're both in the US, and we like our lives. We don't want to spend the rest of our lives in prison. So that was not something we were willing to go and chase after. So a lot of the other sort of use cases we're playing around with marketplaces, you know, you don't need a decentralized T-Shop store, right? Shopify works just fine for that. It's really like whatever use cases where you really need that decentralization. And it tends to be more in the gray and in the black areas that are really hard for, you know, teams like ours to really go after and build out. But what we sort of learned was that things got way, way easier once we started focusing on NFTs. All of the questions that were really hard to answer when you're connecting sort of online, offline world, suddenly become a lot easier with NFTs, right? So if you're trying to do like an Airbnb type experience and someone's claiming they had a terrible experience at Airbnb, and you're like, I don't even know if the home exists, right? Like, someone put up a listing and they claim they have a home, and someone claims they stayed there and they said they had a bad time. Like, how do you even arbitrate that and figure out what actually happened? On, you know, with NFTs, everything is just on the blockchain. Everything can be validated by the smart contracts themselves, and so everything gets way, way simpler when you just focus on, you know, NFTs and digital assets. And so that's, I think that's going to be a sort of a stepping stone. It's going to be, you know, we're going to learn a lot about how to run decentralized marketplaces with NFTs. And then hopefully we can start getting back to that original vision around, you know, unlocking some of these real world experiences as well. We're already starting to see that a little bit. So one, we partnered with Roofstock. They have, you know, they're a unicorn company. They help sell homes, and they actually tokenized their, we've actually sold two homes now as NFTs. And so basically how they set it up is the homes themselves are owned by LLCs. And then in charter for that LLC, it says, whoever owns this NFT owns this home. And so then you have this NFT that you can, you know, transfer on OpenSea, or you can use it any, you know, however you want. And whoever owns that legally owns that house due to the, you know, the way that the charter is set up. Wow. And so you think about
like a fishing link.
How efficient, right? And so think about the future where now you can take that NFT, you can pop it onto a lending platform, and now you can take out a loan against the collateral of your house, and lever up on Bitcoin using your house as collateral, right? Like, how cool is that?
Sounds dangerous, and we do not endorse that kind of behavior. But the optionality is good. I love the vision of where this is going. You know, we do hear all these stories about, oh, my Bored Ape got stolen because I clicked a phishing link.
Sure.
And, you know, there's going to be arbitration around that where, you know, just because you steal the keys to my house doesn't mean you legally own my house, right? And so there is going to be some level of gray area there, which I'm excited to see how the real estate market works itself out there. But I think it could, a lot of efficiencies could come from NFTs. I think really, you know, the one thing I want to really highlight is that for all the yield generation stuff that's going on, I think decentralization is really the key, because against a backdrop of catastrophic failures in the crypto lending market of 2022, where every single centralized lender, barring, you know, a couple, went belly up, went bust, are dealing with gnarly bankruptcy claims right now. We know a lot of people who got tied up in Celsius or BlockFi or FTX and all that shit. Yeah. And so that was all a function of centralization, opaque yield sort of mechanisms, opaque tranching. And I think what makes Origin different and particularly just interesting is that everything is handled in a decentralized way. All of the components that go into any sort of product is all publicly auditable. And, you know, it's funny because Sam Bankman-Fried, there's this big 45-page court document that just got released this weekend. And it's like Sam Bankman-Fried saying how unauditable FTX and Alameda really were. And he goes, sometimes there would be days where we would find $50 million and nobody knew where it came from or how we got it and all this stuff. And it's like, that was like the level of, you know, gross negligence and ineptitude that was going on over there. But that would never be able to happen if they were accountable publicly on the Ethereum blockchain, like what Origin's doing. So talk about that a little bit and give some color into decentralization in your protocol.
Yeah, I love the way you set that up and described it. I think it's absolutely correct. It's more important than ever. And a lot of people who are like, yeah, decentralization, no one really cares. Now they're like, oh, I get it now. I see
why. Now I fucking care.
Now I get it. You know, that nice to have, you know. I remember 2018, everyone's like, oh, no one really cares about decentralized. No one really cares. And it's like, well, now they do. Now they understand why this stuff matters. And I think people are sick and tired of trust us, funds are safe finance, right? Whether it's in traditional finance, whether it's in, you know, the centralized lenders out there that all collapsed. After, you know, FTX, you could see the outflows from centralized exchanges into self-custodian wallets. And so, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried and Gary Gensler have probably done more for the cause of decentralization than most of us who are working in the industry trying to convince people that, that this is something we should do, right? So, you know, people really are starting to get the importance of it. And so for us, you know, we take it very seriously, right? It's all the funds are completely auditable on chain. Our code is open source. We take it one step further than a lot of projects in that we do all our work in public as well. Right? So our Discord is open to public. Our entire team works there in public. So not only can you see the code, but you can actually be part of the conversations and discussions as we're making decisions and deciding how we want to implement things. And so that, you know, they say like sunlight is the best disinfectant. And it really, really is true that like you're, when you're doing work in public and you're getting lots of eyes on stuff, it ends up making your work that much more secure. It makes it, you know, you get the advantage of multiple perspectives and opinions, and it just makes it stronger, as a result. And so, people don't have to wonder like where the yield's coming from. All of that is visible on chain. And, we also do a lot of work just to make it easy for other people to understand, as well, because, you know, not everyone, you know, is able to dig through, you know, block explorers and figure out exactly what's going on. And so we have lots of analytics dashboards and tooling to let people see exactly where those funds are and how everything's being earned. And then the governance is also super important as well, right? And so we're quite proud of the progression we've made to progressively hand over control of the contracts to our community. So, like many projects, we started out, you know, just sort of deploying them on a single wallet, moving them to multisig. We put a time lock in front of that multisig, so that if we were to ever do something malicious, our community could see that it's coming and someone could sound the alarm. Hey, something bad's about to happen. And people would have time to get their money out before that code is actually upgraded, you know, like that code is executed. And then finally, we've actually now handed over the keys to the community. So OGV is... OGV holders and are literally the ones who are controlling the protocol. Wow. You know, it's 100% token governance at this point. And they're actually, you know, there's still a time lock in front of it. So if something does get through, people can see what's happening. But yeah, it's fully community owned at this point.
I love seeing a founder and a project where this road to decentralization is actually happening. And it has to happen in phases. It can't just be at once. And it takes a lot of time to build a strong community, to trust, to, you know, take over raising your baby, essentially. So it's amazing to see that with Origin. And if we're going to be trying to onboard the next 100 million users, something you touched on earlier that was a missing component back in the day was identity. Now there's several different options to choose from, whether it's soulbound tokens or connecting a third-party service like Civic or Lens Protocol or DSO, or potentially even something a little bit more sophisticated like a user's biometric stored in their device's secure enclave. How is Origin going to approach blockchain identity in their protocol?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. It's not something we're working on specifically ourselves, although we're certainly... keeping tabs on, you know, the different work in this space. I think my thinking has evolved over time. And that is kind of like you talk about the hacks of people, you know, losing their apes and stuff like that. You certainly have been a lot of challenges around maintaining a specific key, right? And so if you have your whole identity tied to a single wallet, what happens if it gets compromised? How are you going to, you know, what's the process for moving to a different key? You also have a problem of like, you don't actually want to have all of your financial data tied to a single wallet, right? I don't share a screenshots of my bank account with the entire world. It's a bit weird to do that in crypto, where you know, it's very, very challenging to stay anonymous or keep your transactions you know, completely anonymous. And so I think these are some of the challenges we haven't fully figured out yet on what does that look like? Do we want to have all of this stuff fully public to the entire world? I don't think the answer is yes, right? I think some stuff is fine, other stuff, you know, we want to use, you know, ZK snarks and use zero knowledge proofs to be able to add more privacy into the mix as well. And so I'm pretty excited about the work that's being done on that front. Obviously, privacy is really important, and financial privacy is really important. So I think we've got a lot of work to do on that front to be able to do identity, but also have privacy as well.
Yeah, and I also think it's important to understand this is not like unauditable privacy. This is cryptographically provable truths that are anchored on chain that retain privacy, but you know, prove that, you know, statements or, you know, things that are being transacted are not counterfeit. And these signatures are real signatures. And I think that's important, where you could, you know, think, oh man, well, here one second this guy was saying everything's publicly transparent, unaudible, and then I'm hearing that, you know, we need more privacy. So I think a lot of people have those two notions as a binary in their mind, that they can't actually be publicly audible and private. But ZK snark and zero knowledge proofs and all the zero knowledge technology, which everybody is going to start hearing a lot more about in crypto, kind of offer this. Would that be a fair kind of suggestion to the audience?
For sure, for sure. And one thing I often hear getting conflated is sort of the power of public key encryption and the fact that millions of users now have wallets where they can sign a message and verify a signature. That often gets conflated with blockchains and the ability, you know, wherever we take that signature and we store it on an immutable database that's shared across tens of thousands of computers all around the world. Those are two separate things. And a lot of times, all you need is the signatures. And you know, I think one of the best things come out of crypto is now we have millions of people have a way to you know, public key encryption, generate signatures, verify signatures, and a lot of stuff doesn't need to be stored forever. You can. There's a lot of really cool things that you can do just with public key encryption. I find it very magical, and it's actually the answer to a lot of the fucked up systems in this world that you just go, what would be a better way of doing this? It's like, oh, public key encryption, right? So here in the US, you know, when you're born, you get a social security number, and you have this number. They give it to you in literally like a flimsiest little piece of paper. It's not even a card. They don't even laminate. It's just a piece of paper. And they say, this is the most important document the government will ever give you in your life. Don't let anyone else have this number, because then they can like open up bank accounts, take out debt.
They can
ruin your life. Oh, but you have to give it out all the time if you want to, like, get, you know, it's buy ridiculous. A car or get a job or whatever, right?
Also, the same concept applies to like when you write a check, and on the bottom is your account number and your routing number. It's like you give somebody a check, and then they have, if they wanted to be
the private
malicious,
key, you know,
yeah, they have your private key.
It's the same, you know, credit cards, same thing, right? Like that should be the credit card number should be the public key. And there should be a private key that's held, you know, privately. But no, we publish was essentially the private key. And then we give it to strangers all the time. And they run in the back room and, you know, hopefully are not jotting it down to go, you know, have a field day on Amazon later, right? So what is a solution to all of these things we talked about, right? Social security numbers, checks, credit card numbers, all of that. The answer is so obvious, right? The answer is public key encryption. And so whether you use a blockchain in collaboration with that or not, maybe you need it, maybe you don't. But public key encryption is really a solution to a lot of these problems around identity and how you prevent fraud and abuse. Think how much credit card fraud could be eliminated if you simply treat it as, the credit card number is a public key, and maybe it pushes a push notification to your phone where your private key is held, and then you either approve or you deny it, and then it goes through, right? Like, so simple, right? These solutions are right in front of us. And so I would predict we're going to start seeing a lot of this, a lot of things we've learned from, building blockchains and public key encryption. We're going to see a lot of that start getting adopted by traditional finance as well. It just makes so much sense not to do it.
It's so obvious when you put it like that. It makes me wonder what's taken so long. But with all that said, some of these features are still lacking on Ethereum mainnet. Is there any thought of maybe some adoption to layer two to have optional ZK privacy or save money on some gas fees? What's some of the next technical updates for Origin?
Yeah, we are looking into different layer twos. We don't have any immediate plans to port Origin Dollar to other chains. Origin Story is already available on Polygon, and we're working on adding support for additional chains on that side of the business. So, you know, things are a little bit easier on that front. There's quite a lot of complexity with Origin Dollar because as a yield aggregator, we're getting the yield from multiple different protocols. And so if we go to, you know, Arbitrum, the protocols that we can earn yield from are completely different from what they are on Ethereum. So it just means the amount of work we have to do to understand them, understand the risk profiles, monitor them, is quite a heavy lift. And that's just for one chain, right? So imagine doing that across, right, you know, five or six different chains.
Wrong there with all the different protocols? I mean, the more complexities, the more risk. That's why MakerDAO has only stayed on one chain, Ethereum, right? They're like, we're not going to screw around with everything.
And you add in the bridging risk, and you add in different assets on these different chains. You have different protocols. Like, there's, you know, you can take a fork of Compound to a new chain, put in slightly different assets, and the thing can blow up, right? So you've got to be really, really, really careful with what you're doing. And so it's something we want to do, but it's just that down the line, we're not quite ready to bite that off. It would help a lot if we can just get a clear winner in the layer two wars, right? Right now is a bit of a race between, you know, multiple players, and kind of who's in the lead changes from month to month. And so it makes it really hard for us to know where to invest our resources, as all, you know, incentives often change, kind of dynamics there on where we want to go. And, you know, if it takes us months to write some code and get it audited and ready, you know, what if we do all that work and all the actions move to another chain by the time we get ready to launch? So it's been a bit of a challenge for us. You know, hopefully we'll get better at it at some point.
Speaking of a challenge, you're a founder that's now been through two bear markets, yet you still have your hair. You still have your company, and you still are able to laugh. You have a smile on your face. What's the secret sauce from a founder's perspective of, you know, keeping your company afloat, keeping the mood light, the belief strong? I know there's a lot of people that are listening right now that are losing their hair and they're losing some sleep as they look at their bags underwater and wondering, you know, will this stuff even be around in a while? Can you give us some words of encouragement in these crazy times?
Yeah, I mean, at first it comes down to just like a fundamental belief in why we're here, what we're building, why it matters, and how important it is, right? And so, you know, despite like all of the stuff that's happening in traditional finance, the banks collapsing, the dollar inflation, you know, a lot of things that give you, you know, cause for concern, it's also a reminder of like, why this stuff is so important in the beginning, right? It's like the initial message that was baked into the genesis block of Bitcoin was like, you know, we're on the brink of a bailout for banks, right? And that was encrypted right there in the initial block, and that's why we're here, right? It really believing in why we're here, why this is important, why this matters. That's sort of foundation that keeps you going. And then I think the second thing is just learning to manage your emotions, which is a lot easier to say than do. But I think there's definitely an art to, you know, during the bull markets, you know, regulating your euphoria, being, you know, not getting carried away, not getting too excited. Because, you know, when you go into the bear market, you don't want to be depressed and let the market drive your emotions. So the more you can just stay centered, realize that there are cycles in crypto. And after you've been through it a few times, you start kind of getting used to the volatility, right? We've been through bear markets before. We're going to be through bear markets again. But we're also, you know, it's the bull markets. that are kind of the exciting part that gives a lot of opportunity as more people come in. So part of it is just experience. You kind of get used to the ride. But realizing why we're here and why it matters is really the key to staying resolute, even when things are get a little bit discouraging on the markets.
No, Josh, you really hit the nail on the head. Couldn't have said it better. You know, somebody as well who's been through a few bear market cycles, myself, the key is staying optimistic and, you know, looking at what this industry can be 18, 24 months out and buying based on that. You know, you don't buy based on present value. You kind of buy based on where this could go, future value. And with Bitcoin, for instance, Bitcoin's halving is coming up next year, and it's floor price for its cost of production for Bitcoin is going to be right around $40,000, all else staying equal. And that's just a year away. So Bitcoin's going to have fundamentally, it's got $10,000 to go until it just hits its floor value. And historically, it's traded very, very, very far and long above its floor value of cost of production. So, you know, we're underneath that. I think that's a tailwind. But before I let you go, I got one question about another tailwind in our ecosystem, potentially a headwind. I don't know. You tell me. Ethereum Shanghai. You know, by the time viewers are listening to this, it will have been a few days after Shanghai goes live on April 12th. Wednesday is when Shanghai goes live. What are your projections just for what's going to happen? Are things going to go smoothly? And what makes this so important? I kind of view it as a moment where, you know, the internet gets its native yield-bearing instrument and it's this explosion of new stuff. Is it going to change your guys' business at all?
It is. I'm glad you asked. We're actually getting ready to launch a new product. It's called Origin Ether or OETH. And basically, it gives you a way to stack Ethereum just like you can stack dollars with OUSD. And so it's going to be the easiest way for you to earn yield on Ethereum. You just grab some OETH and it will grow in your wallet. And the way it does that is with LSDs or liquid staking derivatives that are coming from the different staking rewards that are available. So we're super excited to be launching that. It's going to be coming out very, very soon. It's essentially the exact same code base as Origin Dollar. So you get kind of the same security guarantees. It's been audited by Open Zeppelin and Trail of Bits and all the top firms, and it's been battle tested with hundreds of millions of dollars, but you're getting kind of these new assets and these new ways to earn on your ETH. And so anyway, predictions, what's going to happen? I think looking at it, Ethereum actually has a pretty low staking participation level compared to other layer ones. I think there's a lot of room for more people to come in and start staking once it's easy to unstake, right? And so it's pretty, people are very rational about this, right? You don't want to stake your ETH if there isn't a good way to unstake. And so I think...
you want to drive down the two-way street, not a one-way street.
Exactly. So that's going to make it a lot easier for a lot more people to come in and start participating. Some of the things that will happen, I think we'll probably see, staking rates go up. We'll probably see the yields come down. One, because the native yield is going to come down. And then because there hasn't been a way to unstake, companies like Lido have had to offer a lot of incentives to guarantee liquidity for their tokens, right? So you have your tokens that you can, as an easy way to sort of swap out of that stake position. And so they had to offer like huge incentives to keep that liquidity there. They're still going to want that liquidity, but kind of the need for that is going to drop as people are able to unstake as they want.
The need for the liquid staking derivatives, like the staked ETH, like that's kind of going to diminish, do you think?
I think no, but the LSDs are still going to be popular. People still want liquidity. And it's just nice to be able to have someone else manage it for you, right? The average person doesn't want to run a validator. It's not particularly fun or easy. And you'd rather delegate that someone has, the expertise to keep that running. So I don't see LSDs going away at all. I think we're going to grow. I think we're going to see tremendous growth in that area. And Origin ETH should be a good way for people to earn additional yield on top. So you'll get, you know, superior yields holding OETH than you would holding Lido ETH or Coinbase ETH or any of the native yields, because you're getting all of that yield first, and then we're stacking more yield on top, right? So whatever we can get from lending it out, trading it, any incentives, all of that will be stacked on top. So you'll get superior yields on OETH. And so that's going to be coming hopefully in near future. So
excited to like turbo take that up.
Yeah, exactly.
Love it. Well, Josh, man, this was an absolute, just a great time. I learned a lot, both about the protocol, about, you know, you guys and your growth and where this industry is headed. So we appreciate you spending 45 minutes with us today on the Crypto 101 podcast. Where can people kind of follow along? Where's the best place? I know you said your Discord. People just, you know, go Google it, or where would you want to drive some traffic to?
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter, Josh Fraser. For Origin, you can go to originprotocol.com. And then for USD, USD.com and OETH.com. So we have all the .com domains there.
OETH.com. I'm going to check that one out. That sounds cool, man. I like this. It's just a little a teaser.
Low placeholder coming soon.
When is that launching?
Near future. We haven't announced the exact date yet, but it's coming.
Sounds good. Josh, thank you so much. And we look forward to catching up with you again here in the near future.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks for having me on.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.